The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO abduction phenomenon. My guest today is Tony Civilelli. Tony was born in Detroit, Michigan. He has looked into the possibility of what he refers to as not of this earth intelligences for over 25 years now. And he has authored a book entitled Ambassadors to the Stars, which explores this theme from a variety of angles in which he feels the sum is greater than the parts. That includes science, technology, UFOs, contact, and media's part, and also human potential. An area of his own personal metaphysical studies that include remote viewing. Initially learned of the Farsight Institution between 1997 and 2003, and the study of out-of-body experiences at the Monroe Institute within the same period. Tony also teaches what is called basic scientific remote viewing, or basic SRV. Tony has recently launched a new website, www.learnremoteviewing.net. It is also Tony's feeling that an expansion of human consciousness may be the key to our next stage of evolution, which he believes may one day include becoming part of the galactic community. So let us welcome Tony Civilelli.
Appreciate it, sir. I've known you for quite a while. It's happy to join you on your show here. We Are Not Alone. So I want to say thank you for that. And what I say, you know, following here is, you know, I just want to let you know and your listeners, it's all in my humble opinion, of course. Mm-hmm. And you had asked, you know, for me to just be comfortable and start out with what got me interested in this. And yeah. Basically, I had an incident that happened to me when I was roughly about 7 years old. I lied down one night. It was a school night going to sleep. And I literally closed my eyes, which I thought was maybe 3 to 5 seconds. And I opened them and my mother came into the room and said, "Come on, you're late. You know, let's get going. We got to get to school." And I lied there and I said, "I just closed my eyes." And she said, "Come on, you know," and she cracked the curtain open and I noticed right away it wasn't like it was, which I thought was 5 seconds ago. And I thought, how can this be? And I told her, I just closed my eyes. And she said, "Well, you probably just had a good night's sleep." And I thought about that and I thought, you know, even that, I remember that morning thing, I've had a lot of good night's sleep and nothing has ever been quite like that. Mm. That's something, Dave, that's been in the back of my mind. It never left. I still remember it very well to this day. And I basically then started at that early age, I understood time was not quite what we think it is. And from there, nothing really that I could remember happened out of the ordinary for a while. And as I was growing up, I went to junior high school, and I remember in the reading class was an independent reading class. I selected a book titled Chariots of the Gods by Eric von Däniken.
Oh, yeah.
And that book really hit home for me. I remember reading it and I had to give a verbal report and I could take a few notes, but not many. And so I took a few different notes, but oddly, I remembered it well. And it just kind of sunk in. I had an interest in, you know, some sci-fi things prior to that, you know, the traditional Lost in Space episodes and Star Trek, etc. But I remember at the report talking to my teacher, and I didn't even use the index cards, if I can remember correctly. And I asked him, this is like really important stuff. Why don't we hear more about it? And he just simply said, well, he goes, you know, there'd be a lot of change involved. And he didn't say one way or another that he believed it or not. But I remember him leaning forward to me and appreciating my enthusiasm about some of the different things that I'd mentioned and the architectural structures, and that von Däniken asked a lot of questions. He wasn't making points to like, oh, it's this way, it's that way. He was asking questions more, right, so people would interpret it to where they would have to look into things themselves. And so after that, I got involved, a little bit of college and started working as a fitness trainer. Then I opened a business as a partner with a fitness center and was a personal trainer in there. And somebody had gifted me the book Embraced by the Light by Betty Eady. It was about a near-death experience. And one of the chapters really hit a chord with me. And it was a chapter called, I believe, Other Worlds, where in this near-death experience, she was taken by a guide, a type of spirit guide, and was scurried across, you know, the cosmos. And she had a chance to visit with other worlds that where their technologies were much greater. And some had said they had visited Earth, I believe. And then all of a sudden it clicked with me again. Wow, this is Chariots of the Gods. This is something similar to that. Mm-hmm. And so that sunk in again, and time went on, and I just kept doing my work business wise and training people. And then there was that TV show, The Alien Autopsy on Fox, and I remember watching that, and it intrigued me again, and things started coming back. And it was about the 1947 potential Roswell alleged UFO crash. And I remember looking at it and thinking, well, I don't know if the autopsy is real or not, but I remember definitely thinking the people that were interviewed were very sincere, you know, people like Jesse Marcel Jr. and Frankie Rowe and Walter Hout. And I thought, well, there's definitely something that probably happened there. And that kind of got me interested in looking into this particular incident a little bit more. So I went to a library, checked out a book. There was other references to other books, and I started a bit of a reading frenzy. And then I started watching documentaries and things like that. And I started doing some of my own travels, and they included a trip to Area 51, Groom Lake. That was in 1999, Rachel, Nevada. And I remember out there briefly, I was with some friends, and there was the black mailbox, which was actually a white mailbox at that time.
Been there.
Yeah, exactly. And there was jets streaming across the sky. It was at night, you know, like late, maybe 12, 1 o'clock in the morning type of thing. And they were so loud and they seemed rather low. And there was just a lot of smoke in the area, and they were practicing what was, I guess, called war games. But then I noticed something off to the side, and it was in front of the mountain areas where there was a light, and it would flicker on, and then it would go off. And then in less, maybe a second, it would be maybe a mile or two away and a little higher. Then it would be again a mile away again, only lower. And I thought there was something going on there that was being tested. And the war games were kind of like maybe leading people to look at that or hear that, and while this was going on type of idea. Mm-hmm. And I just, my gut feeling was maybe it was some type of back engineered technology. And that trip, there was other trips. I went to Sedona, Arizona, did some hiking there, to Roswell, New Mexico. I met Mr. Walter Hout. He was the PIO, public information officer, who wrote the book, not the book, but the article for the Roswell Army Air Force Base captured flying saucer. And, I talked to him a bit about the incident. And he also told me, which he never really said publicly before, that he also saw bodies and that, he seemed quite sincere to me. And I talked to some other people that were in Roswell that really some of them never had any notarized you know, recognition in type of TV shows or interviews or nothing. Nobody would even recognize their names, but a couple of them definitely said something had happened and they knew some of the people that were involved and picking up debris and things like that. And without question, I knew something had gone on there. Then I started attending many UFO conferences, I would say probably around 20 of them between the years of 1996 and 2010, whether the San Jose, Laughlin International UFO Conference, many different type of conferences, met many different people, alleged contactees, alleged abductees, scientists, some military people. I did a lot of interviews with them and et cetera. And this basically got me also involved into looking at another area, and that was the consciousness part of it. And I had seen a quick documentary on Nightline TV show, and I won't go into this into too much detail because we've got other things to talk about, but it was about remote viewing and how the military used this type of extrasensory perception idea to gain information. And so I saw that documentary, and so I made it a point myself to look into it more. And I went out and tried to find a book, a particular book. I couldn't find it, but I found another book, to my surprise, about remote viewing. And it was by a professor out of Emory University named Courtney Brown. He's a teacher of nonlinear mathematics and social sciences. And he had teamed up with one of the ex-military remote viewers, and they used the tool of remote viewing to look at the idea of UFOs potentially extraterrestrials visiting Earth. And when I found that book, I said, well, this is exactly what I'm looking for, because the other book I was looking for was Remote Viewing, America's History of Psychic Spies by a gentleman by the name of James Schnabel, which got me looking for that book. But then I found the Cosmic Voyage book instead, because I couldn't find Schnabel's book, which talked about the whole military and their 20 plus years of looking into psi phenomena and basically using trained military people for that type of projects. Mm-hmm. So after I read the book Cosmic Voyage, I took it upon myself to call the office out of the Farsight Institute, which is where Courtney Brown was now beginning to do classes for basic scientific remote viewing. And I remember talking to the secretary, because I had actually more questions about the book, and I didn't even know about the classes till she mentioned it. But, you know, she answered my questions and to my satisfactory, and she said, well, you seem like you have a genuine interest in this. Would you like to take a course in scientific remote viewing? I said, I don't think I'm quite ready for this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it ended at that. And I remember hanging up the phone thinking, man, that's kind of like a person that's learned a stroke or two of swimming and then diving into the deep end of the pool. And I just didn't feel I was ready. But she also mentioned to me, you know, if you ever think about coming out, it would be an idea to take a course in meditation, perhaps. And I took a course. A couple of days later, I woke up and said, you know, I want to take a course in meditation anyway. So I took a course in transcendental meditation out of the Maharishi Vedic schools. And that was here in Michigan, a satellite school. And their main office, I think at the time, was in Wisconsin, perhaps somewhere in the Midwest. And obviously, it's an Eastern philosophical practice. And I took that course. It was about 5 weeks or so, and once or twice a week for an hour or so. And I reread the book Cosmic Voyage. And by the time I was done with both again, I said, you know what? I think I'm ready to take this course in remote viewing. So I signed up for a course, took a trip out to Atlanta, Georgia for 1 week in the spring of 1997. And it was a very eye-opening experience. It wasn't, you know, magical in that I had visions or heard things or anything like that. But I, along with 15 other people, learned that if you follow the protocols and phases of remote viewing, you could definitely gather information from non-local targets. And there's a whole process to that. And I'm not going to get into that here, but I did that. It was quite satisfying that I knew it had worked, because different people, including myself, had breakthrough sessions. And what's really neat is you're separated from everybody else. You have like this dividing wall in front of you, and each person has a desk and a cubicle, and you do these sessions and you bring them all out at the end. They're all blind. Nobody knows what the targets are. And then when the monitor looks at the targets, you know, we had two groups of like six or seven or eight people each, And then they all put their targets in one at a time. And you'd be surprised, David, how some people would get information, small bits and pieces of information. Then you get three or four people getting the same thing from a target. And that's when I knew, well, there's no question, this definitely works. And I could see how the military would use it, in that they, even though they did their sessions blind most of the time, and they would did them at different times from what I understood, but they would correlate this information. It'd be kind of like putting a puzzle together with all these bits and pieces of information about a particular target. So after that, they suggested at the Farsight to maybe, practice. We would practice amongst ourselves. Then we were suggested to maybe take a course in the study of the out-of-body experience at the Monroe Institute. So I went out to the Monroe Institute in the fall of 1997, and I took a week-long course in the study of the out-of-body experience there. And both remote viewing and the study of the out-of-body experience involved getting information from taste, sight, touch, sound, and smell, without actually being there firsthand, bringing it back and recording it. Remote viewing is more like your mind or subconscious mind is like an antenna, and you're getting information back to you, where the out-of-body experience would be more a little bit like astral travel and has a bit to do with sound frequencies. And they line it up to where you wear headphones and you're in like a cubicle there as well, and you're relaxing, and they have two different types of sounds going on. One is for the waking conscious mind that's walking you through, and the other is a sound that's very, very faint. You know, there's a whole history behind this with Bob Monroe. He's the founder of it. And that second sound is very faint. You really can't hear it consciously, but together they produce some type of a binaural beat. This is how I understand it, that creates a cerebral wavelength inside your brain that creates a neurological effect that allows information to be transferred from the theta brainwave state to the beta brainwave state. And real quick, you've got four major states of brainwaves that go on. Delta is when you're asleep. It's below 4 hertz. Between 4 and 7 hertz is the theta brainwave state. And that's just before you fall asleep and just before you wake up. And that's when you're most open to any type of subtle energies that might be around you. So that's something that I've learned and experienced myself. Then you have the alpha brainwave state between 8 and 13 hertz, which is when you're daydreaming. And then you have your waking beta brainwave state, which is 14 to 32 hertz. And that's your waking thinking processing state. But the binaural beats of the Monroe Institute, the headphones that you wear by the two different sound waves that go in, produce that wavelength that's a neurological effect that sometimes allows information from the theta brainwave state just before you wake or just before you sleep to be transferred to the beta brainwave state. And then you can remember dreams a little bit better, perhaps out-of-body experiences and things like that. I went back to the Monroe Institute back in 98 for another week-long course, a little bit more advanced, studied out-of-body experiences, and had two guest instructors, Joe McMonagle and Skip Atwater, who were two previous military remote viewers. So I got a lot from them, especially Mr. McMonagle. And I also learned that the Monroe Institute was a prerequisite for all the military remote viewers in the 70s. And then I went back to the Farsight Institute between 2002, actually, and took another more advanced course there in the study of remote viewing, and also learned how to teach it at that particular 1 week course as well back at the Farsight. And between 1997 and 2003, I literally remote viewed or monitored hundreds of targets. Now, if you were to ask me, David, am I an expert at it? I would say no, but I'm proficient at it. And I've had a lot of good sessions, but I've also had a lot of bad sessions, but I also have an affinity to teach. And so that's where my strength was, especially coming from a personal trainer background as well. And that's what I've done that on and off for quite a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I got involved with a couple of different projects that involved 90% of my remote viewing, David, it actually had nothing to do with paranormal or UFOs, but I did get involved with a couple of different projects. One in 2003, The Secrets of Redgate, where some people out of the Farsight put this together, and I was blind to all the targets as all the viewers were. And then another one was the 2010 project with three remote viewing schools, Lynn Buchanan School and Glenn Wheaton School out of Hawaii. Buchanan was out of California, and Courtney Brown's school out of Georgia there. And Brown put it together and got, I think, between 9 and 12 viewers. And we looked at what was called the artificiality on Mars, question mark. And this might be something your listeners might be intrigued by. It was very interesting, again, blind to the targets, meaning nobody knew what the targets were. I did these targets actually at home. Everybody got the targets mailed, just coordinates. That was it. The actual photo was from one of the laboratories, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and you know, working in conjunction with NASA, and they had this image, and we didn't know what it was. And it looked like something that could be like a water hose or a very large type of thing on Mars. But anyways, we all viewed this, you know, three different sessions each, because there were three different aspects of the target. And this is all up at my website in terms of some of the presentation by Professor Brown at the Society of Scientific Exploration in Colorado in 2011. But some of the sessions are actually up there, and it's as his 13-minute presentation that I have a short video of at the website as well. And when I got there, you know, in terms of what I felt was definitely something was going on in an area. I actually thought it was Hawaii. You know, that was part of my deductions, because when you remote view, Dave, you never really want to name a target. You don't want to guess what a target is. You just simply want to describe what you're sensing, you know, out of taste, sight, touch, sound, and smell. And the protocols and phases keep the conscious mind occupied, all the while the information comes to and through to the subconscious mind, and then you write it down on paper with a pen. And so I was getting, you know, this information that it was a secluded area, you know, a hill area. I thought, again, you know, I was deducting Hawaii as part of this, but there was definitely some type of water scenarios going on, water flowing, some type of irrigation of water underground. And then, you know, as we did all these sessions and we finally, and there were people, you know, there as well, I didn't get a feel of different people. I didn't think it was anything, as you would say, or a feel of extraterrestrial there, but somebody had a project going there that was doing some type of water irrigation, that was some type of a terraforming wherever this place was at. And we found out, you know, I found out it was actually Mars, and it was a current photo of the one of the Mars orbiters that, and I have the exact photo name, I believe, somewhere here, I thought. Yep, it's the source photo. It was Mars Orbital Camera, a narrow single angle image, M111-00099. And it's courtesy of NASA Jet Propulsion and Malin Space Science Systems. So quite an interesting project that Professor Brown had put together that involved three remote viewing styles from three different schools with several ex-military remote viewers. And I was, you know, honored to be part of that and come up even myself with really interesting bits and pieces of information.
I need to interrupt you for a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Tony Civilelli.
And then after all of these things, I didn't get the Mars project put into, but I put the book together in 2011. It's titled Ambassadors to the Stars. And that came
tell
out.
Tell us about that.
And I revised it in 2015. Well, basically, it's an accumulation of a lot of the things that I had just talked about, different interviews, many people, you know, from contactees to abductees. I mean, everybody from, you know, the Allagash event to, you know, I met Jim and Jack Weiner at a conference and Charlie Fultz. Well, I should say Jim Weiner and Charlie Fultz. Jack was not there at that time. And many other
things. Allagash?
The Allagash events in there. There's just so many different, there's like 15, you know, UFO abductee, contactee type of stories in there. Different people from the Navy. What really got me interested in a lot of this was USOs, unidentified submerged objects. Kind of put me over the top, because I thought, you know what? Now, the Earth is 70% water. And if there's UFOs that are constantly coming in and around here, the USOs, in the Navy people that I interviewed, and some of them are in the book as well, that really put me over to, there's no question about it, this is going on, and it probably has been going on for quite some time. And, you know, the whole idea, ancient aliens, I met Giorgio Tsakalos as well at one of the conferences and had a lunch with him. Many different people, actually, are just bits and pieces of their information in this read. And it is a good read, especially if somebody wants to get interested in from the beginning standpoint. There's definitely some science in there as well, just the sheer numbers of planets, I should say stars, the Milky Way galaxy, our own Milky Way galaxy with 300 billion stars potentially, and one out of every six could hold intelligent life. And the closest galaxy to ours is the Andromeda galaxy, which has 450 potential billion stars, and how, astronomers look at things and that they don't look and see actually planets through the telescopes. They actually look at the stars, and if they see a shadow on a star and if it's traveling fast enough and the size is right, then they can determine if that's a planet or not.
Also the wobble of the star.
Oh, yeah, of course. Lots of things. Yep, lots of things. There's definitely some remote viewing in it. The project that I talked about earlier, The Secrets of Redgate, that whole project is actually in there. I presented with Jim Mars and some of the people that participated in it as well at the 2004 International UFO Congress Conference in Laughlin, Nevada. I take a look at the whole Hollywood idea, from my information and from talking to different people and just even myself looking at it, that there's been a slow indoctrination process going on since the 1950s. And very few people know about things like, obviously we got the Roswell crash in 47, but few people know that Marvin the Martian came to be exactly 1 year after the Roswell crash in July of 1948. He made his screen debut. And it's all the 50s movies for the B movies, Earth versus the Flying Saucers, and everything from the day the Earth stood still into the 60s with the Twilight Zone and Outer Limits. I give a little bit of information about some of them. Mm-hmm. Then in the 60s, later part, you got Star Trek. In the 70s, you got Star Wars introduction. And then you come into things like Stargate and the X-Files. And the idea is, and I feel it's probably correct, is that there's two different groups of people out there. One that has a group that has monetary interests, energy interests that really don't want this information to come out.
Right.
There's another group out there without question that they want the information to come out, but not too fast because it would create chaos, but they want the information to come out. And that's part of where the whole Hollywood, yes, there's money involved in it, of course, but there's ideas. It's something that's probably innate in all of us, that idea to explore, let alone create or do those type of things, because I think we'll get into this in a little bit, maybe is my philosophical aspect. But maybe, the indoctrination,
maybe it's not so much they want this information out, it's the fact that they understand this information will come out.
Yes.
Like the Pentagon and their admission that these things are real and they're not ours.
Right. Just recently, yep.
Would you consider the Pentagon's admission of their UFO reality, or UAP reality, I should say?
Yep, UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena, correct. Right.
Would you feel that that is and their admission is tantamount to disclosure?
I think like you just said, David, I think they might be in a position, and I'll get right back to what you just asked me, but to finish up where I was going before is that the one group feels that each subsequent generation would be more inclined to understand this and believe this, as long as it's not too much too soon. There's an old adage that says you cannot go to something that doesn't exist overnight to it does exist. That's chaos. Right. But you can go from no to maybe, and you can do that for several generations. And then as that maybe sinks in, knowledge, information, all of that type of thing is actually an energy, and that energy can actually seep in. I really feel this is true. It's back to like what's called a Lamarckian inheritance, where if you feel and hear and see something often enough, you're going to be more inclined. But not only you are going to be more inclined, your genetic offspring are going to be more inclined to actually go with it as well. I mean, how many right. times do you see things with people that have a particular sport talent or an interest talent, and their offspring will have that as well? And not only because they've been introduced to it, but also because they're inclinated to it in a genetics way. And I think our visitors may have something to do that as well. But back to what you asked me is about the UAPs. I agree with what you just said a few moments ago, that they may not have any choice and they have to put something out, because they're going to look like, you know, foolish if they keep denying, and everybody's got cameras and military people and Navy people, everybody's coming out, and you can't keep a lid on something this big in, you know, infinitely. It has to come out. It's kind of like a volcano, you know, waiting to explode. If you can't let it spew a few different times, a little bit here, a little bit there coming out, then it's just going to explode out. And that's not going to work for anybody, for you, regardless of the people that want to know about it or the people that want to control the people that know about it.
Right.
So they feel, in my humble opinion, again, is that I would say they know that some of this does have to get up, come out. And that's a bill that was passed that allows for, you know, more research and financial, you know, research and ability to look certain people, a committee to put this together, is part of the one group that doesn't really, really want it out to coming out and saying right. it.
Yeah, I think that group is going to cost the money in sale of coal and fossil fuels and
oils, etc.
Yeah.
And I'm really objective with all this, Dave, and you've had conversations with me in the past, and we've talked about things. I'm actually understanding to a certain extent both ends, you know, coming out and not coming out. I'm definitely in the gradual coming out. I don't know, you know, if the average person right now is ready for it to be out. It may have to be to where it's some type of an archaeological find at some point, maybe on it from a different planet, or maybe even here, as opposed to actual live aliens landing on the White House lawn, that old type of thing. I think even that has to start, if it's going to be definitive, in a bit of a safer manner, to where if you find something that's ancient, you know, like what Ancient Aliens talks about, or you find something that's definitive that's ancient, that's not a threat to everybody's, you know, personal life right then and there per se, but right. it's definitely going to say, well, it's here, as opposed to saying, wow, okay. If we have to change our energies overnight, and we're changing energies now, as you and I both know, I mean, look at just the electric and everywhere in the automobile industry, and Michigan here was the auto capital of the world for a long time, but now that's changing. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure we can handle the energies that this confirmation or truth puts forward immediately. I think there has to be a part of consciousness, in my opinion, and here's where I get philosophical, that has to grow as well. Our technology is growing faster than our evolution in terms of consciousness, in my humble opinion. And I think we need to somehow, some way, even that out, and, you know, by whatever means people need to do, whether it's, you know, practicing, you know, greater philosophies in terms of prayer or group consciousness, all the different type of exercises that you can do. But we need to be able to develop our own sixth sense, so to speak, a little bit of, you know, the ability to understand telepathy a little bit, you know. That's why I feel remote viewing is a very fascinating thing, because it allows people to get in touch with another aspect of their being and exercise it. It's not never been really about me when I teach remote viewing. Oh, did you get that target, or you're not getting that target? The byproducts of the target practicing, of the learning of remote viewing, is, I think, one of the tools that people can use to step up consciousness awareness. And that's, you know, things like by practicing something like this, or even yoga or meditation, or again, prayer, group meditation, all those different types of things. And I think you start gaining cognitive ability, you start gaining more intuitive gut feeling, sixth sense, you start noticing more synchronicity in your life. Those are the things, once you start practicing exercises that allow consciousness expansion and awareness, those things start taking place. And I think that type of consciousness, in my opinion, is needed in order to negate some of the just getting all technology. Because if we have gun law problems of just, you know, people, you know, using it for violence and things like that, well, if anything got out with, you know, lasers and, you know, definitely other energies that are much more potent. I mean, how do we control that?
Right.
That's the byproduct of learning about UFOs. They're not coming here using gasoline.
Right. Well, they talk about, like Dr. Greer talks about, zero point energy.
Sure.
And the reporters made fun of him when the Disclosure Project first came out. Zero point energy. There's no such thing as zero point energy. Ha ha. Well, there is. And are you aware of what zero point energy is? Can you?
I'm not real aware of it, but it makes me think about the Bob Lazar on Element 115 type of thing that he talks about. Right. So I would say it's relative to something like that, where he's talking about it, people laugh at it, but years later, all of a sudden there's a correlation and hey, there's something to it. So yeah, if you want to brief me on, I've heard of it, but off the top of my head, I don't have that knowledge.
Well, I don't really either, but I understand, from what I understand, it is using the energy that is all around us. And once you use it, and it cycles back out into all around us,
right,
you're actually putting more energy back in than you had taken out.
You know, what makes sense there, and this is something I have been exploring a little bit, especially the last couple of years. And again, I'm no scientist. And again, some of this is my humble opinion. Mm-hmm. But quantum mechanics, as we learn more about that, example, like we're learning from the Large Hadron Collider that's out in Geneva, Switzerland, that machine that's basically 17 miles in circumference and basically shaped like the Infinity insignia. It's 570 feet underground and it weighs excess of 38,000 tons. But they do things like exploring black holes, creating stargates, looking at subatomic particles. I mean, you've got mass, you've got molecules that equal the mass, but which equals the molecules is atoms. And what equals the atoms is protons, electrons, quarks, gluons, neutrons, and inside of that, then it goes all the way to string theory, M theory. But that's kind of been pushed off to the side. Now you've got more things like E8, things like that, where physicists like Cle Irwin or Garrett Lisi or Nassim Haramein are looking at the idea that photons, even electrons, may be entry points into other dimensions if angled and used correctly. It's kind of like the pyramid on top of the pyramid where the points are there. It's also a basis of what is above, meaning black holes that Einstein theorized for a long time, and more people are definitely understanding that idea. Well, what is above is also below. It's all energy. And when we see things like UFOs or spirits or other things that come in and out of what we would call here the third dimension that vibrates at a certain frequency, there has to be an entrance and an exit point. Those points are energy. I think it's quantum mechanics and that will explain this. And J. Allen Hynek himself, obviously most of your listeners are probably familiar with Mr. Hynek, astronomer and worked on Project Blue Book, et cetera, where he changed his thoughts as he was going more along with the Project Blue Book from the beginning. But, you know, he once said, when we find out the secret of UFOs, it's going to be one hell of a quantum leap. Mm-hmm. I think that was a play on words. It was definitely has to do with quantum and quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier your remote viewing and you saw what looked like a water hose on Mars.
Yes, something that's trajecting water outward, yes.
Right, right. And there are pictures taken by the Mars rover.
Right.
And George Filer has brought this up many times, that it looks like...
Is that George Filer of Filer's Files?
The Filer's Files, yeah.
You got it.
I'm throwing that out because I co-wrote his book.
Sure. Oh, there you go.
But at any rate, he has mentioned many times pictures on Mars or structures on Mars.
Yes.
Not pictures, but structures on Mars. But at any rate, there are these long tubes that seem to go all around Mars. They seem to be underground. And then for a certain amount of space, they come up out of the ground. Up out of the ground and then go back in. And it might be a form of underground transportation. It might be worms, a long worm. Don't know, but they're there. Could this be the quote unquote water hose that you saw?
Well, I would think it would be one of them. I mean, an idea in some area. I mean, I can only speak for what I literally personally did feel and did sense and did record. Mm-hmm. I have seen the images of some of the things on Mars. We've all seen the face on Mars, some of the pyramids on Mars, and it doesn't stop there. I mean, if that's there, then obviously there's other things that are subterranean as well, no doubt. Right. I have heard of the idea of the tubes, the interconnecting tubes underneath. Yeah. I think some of these tubes, I think there's just, it's not limited to just that. I think it's also, and this reminds me of something we might want to touch on too. I think there's water. Well, I felt without question, and Mars was a target, there's water irrigation taking place, and people or humans or humanoids were definitely working on it. Mm-hmm. And yes, the one picture that, and that's up at the site as well, does show that, I think, fairly well from that Mars orbital picture that I explained earlier. But, you know, the one thing I also wanted to talk about was that not only are those things taking place, but, you know, people sometimes ask me, you know, are UFOs real, or, you know, who do you think they are? And forgive me if I'm stepping out of bounds here, but I want to emphasize that all of that research I've done, and it's just the tip of some of what many others have done, even to much greater extent, but my own personal feeling on it is that there's no one answer for it. Right. You know, unidentified flying objects or unidentified aerial phenomena, et cetera. You know, it's in my opinion, a lot of times it is just unidentified. And other times it's our own engineered craft that are maybe 25, 50 years, maybe more ahead, and they have to test them out. And we see those sometimes. Sometimes I feel no question about it. There's somebody from somewhere else coming here. There may be bases here under the oceans. That's why I talked about the USOs before. People that are whistleblowers, or people that were ex-military, or people that had come forth and seen it. I think there's has to something to do with space and time. I believe there's past civilizations that were here on Earth that were quite advanced, and maybe some of them are still subterranean. Some of them may have gone off world and come back. So that could be some of it. I also feel there could be beings from the future. I've often mentioned this before. If we learn how to time travel, whether it's in 100 years or somebody already did it 10,000 years ago, or, you know, 10 a million years ago here on Earth, or they learn on another planet a million years from now, regardless of whenever time travel is discovered, and that means, David, think about it, it's going on right now.
Right.
So if it's ever going to happen, it's happening. Yeah. So that's part of it too. The dimensional, we talked about the quantum mechanics, maybe they're from somewhere else, but they have, just like you could put a stealth craft above us that has that type of technology that reflects, you know, the sky around it, or the clouds around it, or wherever, and you can't really see it because it has that reflecting ability. Right. Well, maybe somebody else has taken stealth a step further, and they can step in and out of another dimension for a minute and then come back, and then they can reappear. So it's kind of like they disappear and reappear. Right. I think there's time jumps involved. I think sometimes UFOs that are seen in the same area, sometimes, you know, only 30 years later, I believe it could be the same craft just taking a time jump, and you won't know about it till 30 years later. And you got one witness that's, you know, 30, 50 years ago, they've since passed away. Then you've got another witness in the 70s or 80s, and they may have seen the same exact craft that somebody saw in the 30s. And lo and behold, it was the same craft. And for them, it was no time. For us, 50 years passed. So there's a lot of different ideas, you know, the imagination, maybe not even able to come up with so many things. Then and you take the size.
They may all be correct at the same time.
And misidentified actual objects.
Right. I need to take one more break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, your host, and we're speaking with Tony Civilelli. Back to this now. You have mentioned, I don't know if you've already talked about your Mars RV project, but is this what you've been talking about, your Mars?
Yeah, definitely. That's part of what I've been talking about, yeah.
Very good. And
So we were getting into the philosophical aspect of it, where I've basically have had to look at it. You know, there's so much information and the universe is so big, and how we understand space and time. And we have been brought up in a third dimension, this understanding it goes from point A to point B. That's time. You know, it's 10 years, 15 years, 70 years, 100 years. And it's space, point A to point B. Well, I don't think you can put a, you know, the idea of what we would call nature, the universe, God, creative source in a box. So I think as we expand our consciousness, then we have more of an understanding of the potentiality of UFOs. And that's why we just went over all those particular types of UFOs, or where they could be, or where they're coming from, or where, when, not only where they're coming from, but when they're coming from, that type of right. idea.
Remote viewing has been used, as you say, by our government in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Governments. And is it still being used?
Well, I feel it is. I feel that they have, well, from my understanding, you know, they officially closed the program down back in the early 90s when Nightline came out with that TV special. And then the History Channel came out with a documentary, I believe it was in 1993, titled The Real X-Files, which coincidentally was the same year the TV series The X-Files came out. Mm-hmm. But they had officially closed the program down at that time. But I do feel it still goes on. I think there's, you know, aspects to what we could call government, or maybe more like what, you know, President Dwight Eisenhower talked about, the military industrial complexes that are based, you know, here and there throughout the earth, as well, that have people that are proficient in this practice. I do think it's still definitely going on. How organized and how you can, you know, connect it to a government group, I don't know. I think a lot of times maybe things are done where they're, maybe branches of or subdivisions of, and they're kind of put out there like a subcontracting type of thing. A group might be that does specializations in this type of things, and they're not really officially government workers per se. Mm-hmm. And they may be people that are just out and about that are part of a small group. And if they need information or try to get information that way, they just get a hold of them, you know?
Yeah. So, so you feel that they're still going on with this, just remote viewing. I mean, if it bore fruit, why should they close it down? You know?
Oh, yeah. If something works, yeah.
Just go underground.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If something works, you know, they're not getting the same, how should we say, you know, if you want to look at a bat trail or follow a paper trail funding, you know, because they spent millions of dollars on the program when it was going on.
Right.
So it's probably, you know, they actually hired, once it started, the cat started getting out of the bag, you know, the government didn't deny it. And actually what they did was they hired a third party to come in and take a look at it. This was back in the early 90s. And after a few short months, they came back and literally said, and it was an outside third party, they said, we don't think it's worth the resources you're putting into it anymore. We think you should just maybe advise, we say, close the project down. And so, like I said, that was probably the end of the official use of it, you know, where all those names that were associated with the programs, whether it was Stargate or Gandola Wish or Center Lane, you know, the era of Psi Spies was born back then, but those particular structured projects were probably probably closed down.
So were you or anyone that you knew within the remote viewing community ever successful at ascertaining UFOs / alien beings, their origin, anything like that?
The Mars project that I was involved with, that didn't even come to me, you know, in terms of, you know, you always have it maybe in the back of your mind, but it wasn't a strong deduction is what it's called. I mean, there might've been some deductions with several people with UFOs or where type of idea. I would say the project, and again, this is up at my website too, and a little bit about it, that was the Secrets of Redgate. My colleagues that I worked with on that, you know, and I had some good sessions with this particular project as well. There was one, and that's up there, is a particular round. It was a craft, but I thought, and it had a person, you know, with kind of almond shaped eyes. I actually had it as a pizza delivery person that was Asian. you know, but I drew it out and it was round and it had sections and there was an oriental shorter person there and it's all there, but it was actually a UFO contact particular situation that took place in Deer Lodge, Montana for one of the targets that we looked at. I would say the other thing I got out of it as that project went on and a couple more sessions, but I definitely know my colleagues because I monitored some of these as well. There is something to do with some type of, and I mentioned this earlier, dimensional. There's something to do, the feel of it, David, is just different. And I've always felt about time and dimensions with this. There's got to be something to this to where when you even get an energy, even when you're remote viewing, it doesn't feel the same as you're looking at other targets. There's just some type of a different feel to it. And I think it has something to do with a dimensional existence of some kind that they can go in and out of. And they use these wormholes or portals or vortexes or whatever you want to call it. And they have the technology based on quantum mechanics to be able to do this. And so basically they're invisible to us most of the time.
Right.
Not to mention there are star travelers too. I'm not saying there's not, and there's physical bases, et cetera, but I think some of this has something to do with that type of aspect.
Well, my sighting years ago, I saw a craft come through a wormhole in the sky.
Yeah, there you go.
So, I believe that they are other dimension, other worldly beings. However, they come through other dimensions.
Yeah, the openings, the back to the quantum mechanics, the little
right.
holes that they just open it up. You know, if there's got to be some type of an energy reference here and an energy reference to that. And it's, again, it's that pyramid on top of a pyramid. It's the E8 concept in subatomic particles and quantum mechanics. And it's also the type of golden ratio idea where it ends and begins in the same place. You know, one dimension ends at a photon or electron and the other one is opened up there as well. But there's got to be a technology that allows that to take place as well. And that's what we're experimenting with, things like the Large Hadron Collider there in Switzerland. But there's other areas that are doing this that are probably way beyond where they're at as well. And I do believe we've had help without question by other intelligences throughout our history. I believe in what the ancient aliens theorists talk about, and with some of what they have to say, a lot of what they have to say. I mean, there's that whole aspect of this as well. I think there's been guidance all along. I think there's a project going on. And I hate to say, you know, it doesn't lessen us. The biology is still, you know, I would say the soul or the spirit or the subspace aspect of ourselves is still the essence of who or what we are. And it's connected to a Godhead, a God source, a creative source, but it kind of divvies itself out to kind of recreate creation. And then there's levels of beings that are creating and recreating. And the ones that are above us are just more advanced than we are. I mean, we love to create. That's who we are. We're explorers. We're creators, whether it's creating in a garden, creating artwork, creating music, procreating, exploring. That's the essence and the innate essence of what and who we are. And I think that's just kind of like a chip of off the old block as the creative source is creating, recreating.
Right.
And there's no point A and no point B. There's no time and space involved with the source. Can't put God, so to speak, in a box. We've been trained to think it had to come from somewhere and it's going somewhere. No, it just is.
Just is, yeah. Yeah, I've often said, and I borrowed this from that made-for-TV movie, Bud Hopkins.
Intruders?
Intruders, yes. The greater the universe, the greater the God.
Yeah, the great, and then you know what else? The greater your consciousness, the greater the universe and greater the God.
Yeah, just the infinity circle again.
Yep, without question. I truly believe that. That's why I've had to get philosophical to actually come to a peace of mind with this. It's not about me figuring it all out. It's just allowing me to be part of it and just becoming more aware of what the greater picture is, as opposed to, we all have egos, but I try to put my ego aside. I try to be objective with it all. And it's given me just a little bit more of a peace of mind looking at it from that standpoint, as opposed to, well, this has got to come out and it's got to be this way and it's got to be that way.
No, it
doesn't have to be anyway. There's a lot of things going on. And as time goes on and the infinity of the loop that we just talked about, more and more people will be opening up to this. You can't stop you know, intelligence. You can put a kibosh on it. You know, we could have disasters and things like that. But there's going to be some people from our section now that's going to move forward, and then those consciousness are going to get, some are going to get recycled again, and some of them are going to move off world. You know, let's face it, Dave, we have to terraform at some point. Carl Sagan once said it, because we're kind of like sitting ducks if it's just one planet that we're going to be on. Any type of rogue meteor or asteroid or flood or solar arc from the sun could wipe us out instantly. So we have to be spacefaring, let alone underwater and underground, but spacefaring as well, to have this particular cycle of humanity to move forward.
And that aside, sooner or later, our sun, our star, is going to swallow up everything around it anyway.
Yeah. Yep, that's true.
How can we look out to other star systems and watch this happen and think it's not going to happen to us?
Right.
You know? So,
correct.
Years ago, someone said to me, how can you believe in these UFOs and other beings and God at the same time? Well, that got me to thinking, that's a good question. So, the reason it's a good question is it got me to thinking, and it should get everyone to thinking.
Right.
And after a while, I came to the conclusion, how can you not believe?
Exactly. And that's why you came out with your book, UFOs, The Jesus Connection. What is the title of it again?
The UFO Jesus Connection.
Exactly. I mean, you had to get to that point. It's either you're going to go to one way where it's none of it is true, or another way where it is true. And you work it and you expand your consciousness and say, well, how, then you get to the point, well, how could it not be true? The universe is just, this is just one universe, and there's probably multi-universes. The idea of multiverses by people like Michio Kaku and other great physicists and theoretical physicists, et cetera.
Right, right. I've tried to get him on my show too. Send him
an email. Keep trying.
Keep trying. Just keep harassing him until he says, okay, Dave.
Periodically.
Periodically. Yeah. Come on, Mitchell. Come on the show, you know.
Right, right.
But I don't think that's gonna work very well. So
you never know. He's changed his, in my opinion, when I first started following him and reading some of his books, he's now on Ancient Aliens and the Unexplained and things like that, where at before he probably would not have gone on them, but I think he sees the writing on the wall.
Yeah, possibly so. Tony, where can people go to find out more about your work?
Well, I appreciate you asking this, David. My website, you know, if you want to maybe look into the idea of remote viewing and using that tool to expand consciousness. Again, it's not really about the idea of getting targets right each time. I use many different targets, but it's the idea of increasing cognitive ability, intuition, your subtle senses, synchronicities, etc. So it'd be a great practice for that, or to maybe get the book. It's www.learnremoteviewing.net. And it's a course where you would actually just, it's a virtual course, but there is some one-on-one instruction involved as well. Regardless, you do it on the practitioner would do it. The student would do it on their own time. So it's like 11 different classes. The whole thing takes anywhere from 12 to maybe 15 hours. You know, they're anywhere from 30 minutes to maybe an hour and 15 minutes each. And you just go at your own pace. And when you're done with it, that's when the student and myself hook up with that. This goes in addition to the course, and I go through more things with you about it, and you have a target that I'll have for you. And you also get 25 additional targets. I'll send them out to you, or you can just download them. So this way the student can continue the practice all on their own. It comes with audio guidance by myself as well. So I want to make sure people who do this at least practice maybe once, you know, if not once a week, once a month, so they keep that connection to that exercising. It's kind of like I said before, as a personal trainer, you're not only exercising your muscles, your body, but you're also exercising dormant faculties of your mind and subconscious mind with exercises that are taught in the course of learning basic scientific remote viewing.
Tony Civilelli, thank you so much for joining us. I hope we can do this again sometime.
That would be great. Dave, thank you very much for having me on. I've known you for a long time. I appreciate the work you do and getting the word out there. And it's great that you have this show. We are not alone because we are not.
Thank you. And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR.FM's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you'll find my website with all the archived shows. Please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.